Live on DAB Digital Radio, Colorful.com, and apps. This is Colorful Radio.
An Israeli airstrike in central Beirut has hit an apartment building, killing dozens. It comes hours after Israel attacked several targets across Lebanon. It's day two of the Conservative Party conference in Birmingham, the first for the party since their defeat in the general election back in July. Rishi Sunak won't be delivering a keynote speech and says this conference is about those bidding to replace him in the top job.
This conference should be about their message to you, about the future of our party and our country. One of them will be our next leader, and this is their time to show you what they will bring to the role.
President Joe Biden has pledged to visit communities impacted by Hurricane Helen. A North Carolina county that includes Mountain City of Asheville reported 30 people had been killed due to the storm, pushing the overall death toll to at least 84 people across several states. And health officials have raised concerns over the drop in uptake of the flu vaccine. Eligible people are now being urged to get vaccinated to protect them from winter viruses. From Radio News Hub, I'm Grace McIntosh.
How likely is she to, you know, have another heart attack?
Can I still go to the gym after heart surgery?
Is my mum still my mum if she has a new heart?
When it comes to heart health, no question is too big or small. That's why British Heart Foundation have dedicated cardiac nurses you can speak to by phone, email, or online chat.
Hi, this is Chloe from British Heart Foundation. How can I help?
Search BHF Cardiac Nurses.
Coming up, Metaphorically Speaking.
Live on DAB Digital Radio, Colorful.com, and apps. This is Colorful Radio. Colorful.
Delia.
Colorful Radio.
Hello and welcome to Metaphorically Speaking with me, Delia Delore. This show dissects famous mottos, mantras and metaphors, tracing their origins and how they translate to everyday life. We have a special guest who resonates with their chosen expression each week. Today's guest is Zavira Zay Bell. She's the author of The Morning After, spelled M-O-U-R-N-I-N-G, The Morning After, a collaborative effort that brings together the voices of Black women who have experienced the profound loss of a child. Stay with us as she recounts how this week's metaphor, which is a stitch in time saves nine, brought sorrow, pain, and strength. The first time I heard this metaphor, it was spoken by my father, and it took me a very long time to understand what he meant. And he actually used it, I think, when I was procrastinating about washing dishes, and I just didn't get it that the longer that I left it, the more dishes would be in the sink and the less other people would have to wash their dishes, you know, when they'd used it. Because in our family, after meal times, someone was designated to wash the dishes. And then when the kitchen was clean, if you then went back into the kitchen, you had to clean and dry and put away your dishes. And I just didn't get it for a while. And when I finally did get it, it was, apart from me kind of shaking my head, I thought, oh my gosh, all that time I've wasted. But there you go. I'm not sure what it would mean for you, but I'm sure there is some kind of story that you can relate to with this week's metaphor. A stitch in time saves nine. The first words that come to mind when hearing this sentence are preparation, attention, and care. Prepare in advance and finish something before the last moment. Pay attention to detail and be meticulous about your work, including everyday tasks like pouring water on the flowers. If you don't pay attention, you may overwater it, spill it, or not give enough water. This can be an example when cooking, cleaning, speaking to your children, or studying something. And care for the process. Care is the foundation of everything. If you care about something, you will do it. If you care for your plants, you will adequately care for them. If you care about your identity and career, you will go the extra mile and push your boundaries. Care is like desire. If a person wants something, they will find a way. But now let's try to explain what the metaphor means. If you do what you must do in advance, you will save time and effort to fix something. Or, like me, if you do it straight after, you'll finish quicker. You'll also be able to solve a bigger problem or sew up a bigger hole. Let's imagine that we see a small hole in our shirt. If we stitch it when it is smaller, we will not have to make an extra 9 stitches when it gets larger. This often is connected with procrastination or avoidance of specific tasks. And that's why so many people struggle to reach a deadline, finish their job on time, or properly manage their time, even if they're not working full-time. The question is, why? Today on Metaphorically Speaking, we will dig deeper into this metaphor to help you understand what we have in common and how our minds are responsible for this behavior. In other words, why are so many of us often caught up in mixing 9 instead of doing 1 stitch at the right time? Now, let's examine some examples from people from different industries who explain why doing 1 stitch at a time is better. We will hear part of the TED Talk, Self-Worth Theory, the Key to Understanding and Overcoming Procrastination. Dominic Vogue is the Senior Associate Director of Princeton University's McGraw Center for Teaching and Learning and the author of Life Beyond Grades. He explains that we all have the paramount psychological need to be seen by ourselves and others as capable and able. For example, excellent writer, the best mother, talented director, or any other example that comes to mind. He also explains that our sense of worth comes from our achievements. People who fear failure and procrastinate often have this model set in their minds. Performance is equal to ability, which is equal to worth. People procrastinate not only for things they don't like, but also for things they're fascinated by. Procrastination explains that if you want to succeed in some task, you're afraid of failure, so you postpone and will not face the possibility of failure. Let's hear from him.
Procrastination, in many cases, the cause of that is we're over-motivated. We're overly striving, both away and towards something. And that's what we've learned, that procrastinators are actually not less motivated than the average person, although that's what they say, or I'm lazy, or I don't have time management. Those are really not typically the causes. What it is a feeling of stuckness. Two countervailing forces. We are driven towards success on the one hand, but we are strongly and powerfully motivated to avoid failure on the other. And we feel this stuckness, these countervailing forces. And many people describe procrastination as being stuck or against a wall, an obstacle they can't get over. Does that sound right to you? The phenomenon of it, what does it feel like? We are often agitated. We can't sleep, but we can't work. Right? So we have these countervailing forces, and we're unable to move forward until some moment where we have this insight. We say, if I don't start now, I won't get this done. And the fear of not getting it done, I see the nod, exceeds the fear of doing it less than perfectly, or to an exceptional standard, or to as good as I did it last time. Because those of us who are perfectionists and procrastinate, we've often excelled at high levels in the past, and we can begin to internalize those standards and feel that we must meet them each time. It's important, then, that we come to think about procrastination in different terms. So self-worth theory looks at procrastination with just a different lens. So a common way that we hear procrastination discussed is as self-sabotage. We're handicapping ourselves. We're sabotaging ourselves. But you can see from a self-worth point of view, it's not self-sabotage, it's self-protection. We're trying to protect ourselves, our sense of ourselves as able and capable and worthy human beings.
So if we think about procrastination as a protective strategy for coping with conflicting motivations, if we fail at a task we care about, we have built an excuse, I couldn't have achieved that. I only had 2 hours before the exam to get ready. We're making excuses not only for others, but mainly for ourselves. We protect our self-worth. Most successful people follow one common path, self-awareness and analysis. You can change, evolve, and work towards success by knowing yourself and understanding your inner thinking models and how they affect your behavior. In today's episode, we welcome Zavira Zay Bell. After the loss of her son, Xander, Zay became a passionate advocate for maternal health. She is the creator and founder of two impactful non-profits, Zeal of Xander, Inc., and the Black Birth Institute. Based in Jacksonville, Florida, she is dedicated to addressing the unique needs and challenges faced by Black women. Zay has created An Existence of People, a cultivator of women, a curator of conversation, and a safe place for Black women to land. Thank you for joining us on Metaphorically Speaking today. Of course, the show is all about metaphors, and so I must ask you about the metaphor, a stitch in time saves nine. What does that translate to for you?
I think that was such an impactful metaphor. And basically what it really provoked in me is the thought of when we handle things in the beginning, we do not have to be agitated by the demolishment of our existence or a project or something like that at the end. So when people show you who they are, believe them the first time, it's what came.
Well, you know, it's amazing because when I first heard that term, I was a very little. And when you described it your way, it made me think, you know, I've never thought about it that way. Although it is one of those staring you in the face type of explanations. When I first heard Stitch in Time Saves Nine, it was my father telling me to go to the kitchen and finish washing the dishes. Because I never liked it, washing dishes. And so I would always try to leave it till the last minute. But what was happening, of course, when you leave it till the last minute, the dishes were mounting up.
Yeah.
Even though after dinner, I should be washing the dishes, because I would take my time, but if anyone else had something to eat after dinner, then of course they put it in the sink because the dishes haven't been done yet.
Yes.
We were brought up with after dinner, once the dishes have been washed, then if you use a cup, you wash the cup. If you use a plate, you wash the plate.
Yes.
And I didn't get it. Even though he'd say to me, go on, wash the dishes, a stitch in time saves nine. I said, oh, okay, I did not get it until one day I started complaining. I was just complaining. And my dad said to me, you know, I keep telling you a stitch in time saves nine. And why are you complaining? Don't you know what it means? And then he explained it to me. So, yes, from the way that you explained it, I can see that. But can you see it for me, too, how that could work?
Yeah, definitely. I grew up in Alabama. I'm a Southerner. I live in Florida now. And when I read it, it was a lot of different metaphors. But when I read that particularly, it was not one that registered with me because it's not something that we say. Like, we don't use that metaphor. And it intrigued me. And so I had to go and look for it. So in searching for it, I was reading a story about a gentleman who had, I guess his family had gotten sick, and he kept delaying it, putting it off, saying, no, we're not going to go to the hospital. No, we're not going to go to the doctor. We'll do some self-medication here. We'll take some cough syrup, or, you know, it's not that bad. And so eventually what happened is they were not able to save somebody's life. And so the quote was used, the metaphor was used then, A Stitch in Time Saves Nine. And I was thinking about what possibilities there could have been to intervene and save someone's life, but the delay in how we let other things really take precedent over things that are important in our life. I specifically talk a lot with a lot of women, specifically a lot of Black women in corporate America. And, you know, now we're talking more about what it looks like to have a difficult time getting along with other women in the workforce, and how it's so easy to be disrespected at onset, and how this disrespectful behavior becomes a snowball. And so it just becomes larger and larger and more noticeable and more disrespectful until we get to a place where we just feel like we have no options. And so I was thinking, what could possibly happen and how things could look so much different if we stopped a situation when it occurred immediately, you know, in the beginning, instead of allowing it to grow and grow and grow and fester and really create a toxic environment. So, you know, this metaphor really spoke to me on so many levels, personal levels, professional levels, emotional and mental, because it is important for us for self-preservation to make sure that we handle things immediately so it won't be bothersome later.
You know, listening to your story and hearing your last words where you spoke about self-preservation led me to think about the Bob Marley movie. I don't know whether you've had a chance to see it.
I have not.
Oh, gosh. Do I blow it?
Yeah, you can. I have had so many people tell me about it, but I have not seen it yet.
Okay, well, okay. I'm trying to think, should I say it? Because it can't.
You can say it.
It doesn't give it away. Because, you know, that's one thing sometimes when you watch a movie or, you know, you get to the end of the book and someone gives it away and they spoil it for you. I don't think I'll spoil it for you because you know in the end that he passes away. But when I finished watching that movie, I was so upset with him.
Yeah, about the diagnosis.
Yes, because I didn't realize up until that movie.
Yeah.
That he could have saved himself.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
You know, the movie makes it very clear. You know, movies, you can't believe everything that they portray, but it seemed quite likely.
Yes.
That he would have survived had he removed the big toe, and he yes. did not.
He didn't want to do it because he wanted to continue to play soccer, like football. He did not want that handicap is how he referred to it. And sometimes, like, even thinking about that, is the selfish component that happens at onset of how you want to protect a particular thing. And then you start thinking about whether or not it's important. Is this really important? Because at the end of the day, I make this decision now, and then how many people will it affect later? I think what I have heard that really kind of after researching it is I think the metaphor is an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. And when I think about that, it really provokes me to do a self-evaluation and an audit in my life of if I had done one thing, would another thing had happened, right? If I had prepared myself and I had guarded myself and undergirded myself with the supports that I need, would something had transpired in the end that was devastating? And so when I think about that, I think about my journey through the loss and navigating the loss of my son. And so when I think about the preventative piece of, you know, being in the Black maternal health space, I think about the fact of I did not know that it was an issue. But if I had known it was an issue, would it have changed the trajectory of my life and how the outcome would the outcome still have resulted in me losing him?
Would you mind telling us what happened?
Sure. So I got pregnant at 37 and I had my son at 38. I was going to a practitioner and basically I was telling them that I'm feeling my son low in my cervix. And they disregarded that. And so their solution was, let's check your cervix. Oh, okay, you don't have an infection, but he is measuring small. Let's change his due date by 10 days. And so just letting them know that I was having these cramps and spotting and all of these things. And they told me that it was because I was constipated. Don't worry about it. Go to your doctor's appointment on Tuesday. And that was like on a Saturday. On Tuesday, went to the doctor's appointment. I was in active labor and I was already 1 centimeter dilated. And the result was, by them changing my due date by 10 days, it made my son not viable by 8 days. And so they made us watch my son die on April the 25th, 2018. And what I did not know is that this was a pandemic in the Black community, whether that be here in the United States or whether that be, it's global, right? Black women do not have success, as much success as white women in delivering our children. Our children are 2 to 3 times more likely to die, and so are we in childbirth. And I always wonder, if I had known that first, would I have advocated for myself more strongly? Would I have changed practitioners? Would I have requested a cervicalage to hold my cervix together because I went into preterm labor because my cervix was incompetent? If I had known those things, would the outcome still be the same? So the education piece and handling things up front is how we navigate through this space, you know, of being Black and being women. But we also operate well in the pivot as Black women. We make the best decisions when our backs are against the wall, and that's unfortunate for us. But that is how we have lived and thrived, how we have taken things that were not designed for the best outcome for us, but we have made it a traditional delicacy, a cultural delicacy that people seek after. And that also looks like the pain that we live through as well.
Well, sorry for the loss of your son. My sympathies go to you and your family. It seems to have given you what we call a fire in your belly.
Yes.
Tell our listeners more about you and the things that you do, because you do so many things. There is no way I could explain it all.
Started out my career in corporate America, working in insurance as an adjuster. And when I lost my son in 2018, what I recognized was the negotiation process that I had between me and God. And I told him that there was no way that I was going to hurt this bad for no reason. So something had to happen, right? And so the fire in my belly was an absolute result of me losing him, but also me finding my purpose and recognizing that there was a justice that needed to be sought for Black women, and either I could find the solution or I could be it. And so I decided to be the solution. And so for the last 6 years, it'll be 6 years in July, our nonprofit will be 6 years old. I started that nonprofit 90 days after my son passed away because what I knew was that I needed something to keep me alive. And that was what that looked like. And as a result of the statistics and knowing that Black women with higher educations like master's degrees and doctorates have worse outcomes than white women with less than a high school education when it comes to birthing children. And so what I knew is that I had to be very proactive, and I had to intervene. And so my intervention looked like going within the communities, having conversations with communities, advising Black women of how to protect themselves, advising Black men on how to protect themselves as well, and how to advocate for their children and their mates. And also just creating resources. You know, when I was released out of the hospital, they gave me a box full of things that I could never use that was not relative to culture. And so what I decided was Black women will lose babies. We have done that historically. And we have been sent home with not enough resources. And so the call to action for me was to create the first Black infant mortality anthology with 30 other Black women Which looked like women that had lost their children, and also looked like women that were providers, like doulas and therapists and funeral home directors and so forth, neonatologists and obstetricians. And so we came together to do that work, and it took us maybe about 2 or 3 years to get it done, but it was released in December of last year. And I have been on a journey to go into municipalities that have conversations with their thought leaders about how do we protect Black families, how do we protect Black infants, how do we protect Black women, and how do we ensure that everybody that walks into the hospital walks out of it.
And I know you've done more than just talk. You've put your thoughts in writing. Tell us about your book.
Yeah, so the book is called The Morning After, and I came up with that name because I remember my mother putting her hands on either side of my face and just telling me that in the funeral home parking lot, when they were getting ready to leave with my son, my parents, I applied for a travel permit because I had my son in North Carolina, but I'm an Alabamian. And so my parents drove my son's body home so that they could bury him in our family plot. And so I remember my mother putting her hands on my cheeks and telling me that she can't wait to see who I became after this. And so I did not know that I had the permission to live a full life that was full of joy after the departure of my son. And so what I also knew was that nobody teaches you how to parent a legacy, and nobody teaches you how to wake up every morning and you don't have your child, and that's who you want the most. So I named the book The Morning After because...
And let's get the spelling correct of the book.
Yes. So it's mourning, M-O-U-R-I-N-G. Because nobody tells you how to grieve that. We're not educated on the fact that grief is a gentleman. It waits on you, and you just never know when it's going to arrive, but it will. And it waited on me for a very long time. And it showed up consistently, and I did not know what to do with it. I did not know how to take ownership of it, and I did not know how to navigate through my life having such a large hole in my heart that was the size of my son Xander, and there was nothing that I could do to fill that. But what I also knew was that there were a collection of women that also had that ache in their hearts, and they had not talked about this for years, or they had not been through the proper mental health professionals.
Well, you're definitely making a mark and trying to make the wrongs into rights and the negatives into positives with all that you do. So thank you so much for spending this time with us, Vera.
Thank you.
Thank you for your insights, Zay. Let's go back to our further explorations of the metaphor, A Stitching Time Saves Nine. In this segment, we will look at strategies for overcoming these competitive motivations from the same TED Talk that we heard before, Self-Worth Theory, from Dr. Nick Vogue. We took three strategies. First, develop awareness. Second, tip of the balance. And three, challenge PAW beliefs. Let's hear more about it from Nick Vogue. The first step is to become aware of our thoughts and behaviors. For example, you're a student who has a major exam the next day. You're not fully prepared and need to sit to study, but instead you're cleaning your fridge. Dr. Vogue explains that this is procrastination. It can be a habit of procrastination, something caused by inner fears, or a simple act of laziness. No matter what is causing your actions to go against doing the right thing, you must become present for it and face it. Then you're able to change it. But how can we change it? Dr. Vogue's second strategy is called tip the balance between avoidance and motivation. Sometimes just a single step is enough to start. We shouldn't stress about the big picture when we build a puzzle. We should try to see the big picture as many little pieces, and if we focus on each one, then eventually place them one by one next to each other, we can see the big picture. Slice it up into smaller pieces, make it manageable, or in other words, do the stitch in time. Let's take the same example from before. You're not prepared for the exam. Now you don't have time and you're stressing yourself and you don't know if you'll be able to do it. You're giving yourself excuses. In this case, it's not only one stitch that we have to make because it's a study in the last moment, but we still can learn something and understand this behavior so we will not have to go through the same stressful moments the next time when we have something, exam or deadline. The new story can be you're learning your lesson, and the next time you read one page daily, you will prepare some of the things in advance. You will help yourself because you want to learn that thing. You understand that one day all this can be helpful. All of this is psychological work that can be taken as a mind manipulation. And it's true. But if it's working for so many people, then probably it will work for us. It's not a secret that we operate with a tiny percent of our brain capacity. And maybe it's time for us to understand and remember that the mind is like a computer and we must set the program. The question is, which program will we set? The motivational one or the procrastination one? Dr. Vogue says that motivation only sometimes operates on us even if we have a major deadline or a big hole in our shirt. We need to try to think about it. But how can we do that? We can start thinking about all the reasons why we started that task. We can state reasons why, if we do that action now, we will feel better later. It's about predomination and the reasons for avoidance. Dr. Vogue gives an example of his experience at TED for this talk. He avoided writing his script because he was afraid to speak in front of an audience. Still, he overcame his fears and fought procrastination by reminding himself and writing why he wanted to be there. He is grateful for that opportunity and how it will serve the community. He gave himself better, more significant reasons than the fears were. Let's hear his final words about the technique for overcoming the wrong perception that our worth depends on our performances.
So those are some techniques that help me overcome, not entirely, I'm still pretty nervous right now, but to get moving, to get started, to make progress, to enjoy it so much more. The last way we can tackle procrastination is by really challenging this equation that we carry around in our head as flawed, right? Our performance is not equal to our ability. There are lots of times when our performance was less than our capacity to perform. It's simply not representative. Sometimes it's the other way around. Some of you had really good reputations in high school and you got an A when you really didn't deserve it. So either way, that breaks the A and the P association. But more importantly, is your ability is not equivalent to your worth. Think about the people you love and who love you, the people you value and care about. It's not because of their GPA or their transcript. That is not the case. Our worth derives from our human qualities of kindness, thoughtfulness, and our vulnerabilities, which might be thought of as a weakness. So I want to leave you with one thought from Nelson Mandela, and he said, "May your choices reflect your hopes and not your fears." This is absolutely approach avoidance motivation theory, right there. Can we be motivated by those things we aspire to, not by pretending we don't have the fears, but despite them? Thank you.
It's a beautiful realization and message to spread with people we know, because often we forget where our worth is coming from and we stress ourselves about careers, money, and accomplishments. And all of those things are massively important. We live in a material world, but also it's crucial to constantly remind ourselves that we are worthy and enough just because we exist. That our worth is also our kindness, thoughtfulness, vulnerabilities, how we make others feel about themselves, not how much we can achieve. If you get one thing from this podcast, I hope it will be that realization. But for all of you who want to hear more ways to overcome the habit of procrastinating and leaving things for the last moment, stay with us for our last segment. Now we're going to examine other ways to overcome procrastination. Let's hear from one of our generation's most successful writers and motivators, Mel Robbins, about her only way to stop this habit.
Procrastination is a form of stress relief. Let me explain this. So let's say that you've got some stuff going on in your life, and heck, who doesn't have stuff going on in your life? Maybe you're fighting with your significant other. Maybe mom's or dad's health is failing and it's really, really upsetting you. Maybe you've got some financial stuff. You put too much of your savings into Bitcoin, and now that that's crashed, you're stressed out about it, right? And so you go into work, and when you get into work, you got stuff to do. You kind of walk in, and you got this big stress ball that subconsciously is hanging over your head. And so you walk in, and you sit down, and you know you got 13 phone calls you need to make. And you also know that you've been chickening out, you've been making easy calls, and there's a bunch of CIOs or other people that are higher level that you haven't been calling. And so as you sit down to do it, and you got the stress on your shoulders, your brain, it starts to go, wait a minute, well, you want me to make a call to somebody that I'm scared to make? Absolutely not. I'm so stressed out about, can we just watch some cat videos for a minute? And next thing you know, an hour's gone by. And then, of course, what do? You beat yourself up. So the only way that you can break this habit, and that's an important word for you to hear, you're not a procrastinator. You have a habit of procrastinating. Big difference. Because if it's a habit, I can teach you to use science to break it. You see, all habits have three parts. There's a trigger, and in the case of procrastination, the trigger's always stress. Then there's a pattern you repeat, and in the case of procrastination, it is to avoid doing something. And then there's a reward. You get a little stress relief. The only way to break a habit, you guys, is not to deal with the triggers. You're never going to get rid of the stress in your life. But you can 100% change your pattern of avoiding work. So next time that you're in a situation where you feel yourself hesitate, you spent way too much time checking out the highlights from last night's scores, what you're going to do is you're going to go, oh, I must be stressed out about something. Acknowledge the stress. Then go 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. I want you to count to yourself because I want you to interrupt the habit that's stored here, and I want you to awaken your prefrontal cortex. Then I want you to just work. Just for 5 minutes. The reason why I want you to only work for 5 minutes is because your problem isn't working. It's the habit of avoiding. I just need you to start. And here's the other cool thing. We know based on research that if we can get you to start, 80% of you are going to keep going.
It sounds straightforward, but it's worth trying. I tried many times in my life. I breathe and count. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, and then I start something simple. If I don't want to work out, I start with just simple movements or stretches, and then I inhale and I exhale, and then I motivate myself to do more. And the other thing that I do is I call my granddaughter. So no matter where I am in the world, I will call her and I say, would you like to do some yoga? Because as soon as I open my eyes, she says, Nana, yoga. And then that helps me because I can see her doing the yoga with me. And then we kind of catch up and talk. I know you're not supposed to talk through it, but we catch up and talk and we have a little laugh. And then it puts me in the mood to go and do something more strenuous after that. So we all have our little ways, don't we? And that's mine. And after that, I feel great. So far, we have discussed this metaphor as psychological, caused by our subconscious minds or stress, but we haven't mentioned how important our environment is for motivation. Let's hear tips from YouTuber Joey Schweitzer, who became famous with his meaningful clips sharing beneficial tips and ideas. This one is focused on how to overcome procrastination and how to be more productive.
Number four is purge your physical surroundings. So a lot of the reason why so many of us procrastinate so often is because the physical environment in which we live in practically begs us to. And as we've discussed on the channel before, there's an intimate link between our psychology and our physiology. If we exist in a chaotic, disastrous physical environment, our brain often follows suit. A chaotic and distracted mental state very often creates a chaotic and disastrous physical state, which further perpetuates the distracted mental state. It's a paradox. But it's often so much easier to correct and improve upon your physical environment than it is to suddenly feel good and clear-headed all of a sudden. So if you're more distracted than ever and you're finding it increasingly difficult to get any work done, pay attention to your physical surroundings. Improve upon your physical surroundings. Make sure that the space that you take up is conducive to productivity. It's not just a nothing tip. It's a powerful psychological phenomenon that we need to take advantage of if we want to stay focused. Number five, purge your digital surroundings. Probably even more important in today's day and age is making sure that your digital surroundings and your digital environment that you're a part of aren't begging you to procrastinate every 5 seconds. And this can often be more subtle and insidious than it might look or seem on the surface. When you get a random email from Old Navy that they're having a 40% off sale, even though you haven't shopped there in 6 years, or when you get a little Facebook Messenger blip on your phone from some group chat that you're a part of saying, "Hey, who wants to hop on Apex right now? Did you see the new Halo Infinite trailer?" You know, these things might seem like nothing. You know, a little bit of a 1 second distraction and you can check it really quick and then you can get back to work. But the problem with that is that quite often the most important work that we have to do in our lives requires deep, unbreaking focus for several hours. And it is almost impossible to reach that deep work state when we're constantly being pulled out of it. Our attention is constantly being grabbed by notifications from phone calls, from text message sounds. And if you have kind of an ADHD-esque brain like mine, that's a big deal. You know, you will follow that notification, you will see what someone said on the group chat, and you'll probably engage with it for 10 to 15 seconds, or even worse, you'll go down a rabbit trail and you'll spend 20 to 30 minutes on YouTube, even though you had absolutely no plan on doing that. So one of the most important things you can do to cure your procrastination is to eliminate gateways to procrastination. And it even boils down to the amount of desktop clutter you have, or what's on your toolbar. Because every time your phone buzzes in your pocket, it's like Mark Zuckerberg himself is tugging on your shirt, telling you to pay attention to what he wants you to pay attention to. Because whatever that notification is more important than whatever you're doing. But you have to ask yourself, are you the master of your own life?
It's worth checking out all of the tips from this clip, but focusing on cleaning our physical and online space is simple and essential daily. It's proven that if our space is organized, we're more productive. What about laziness? Often we get tired from too much work, too many everyday tasks, and just in general life. At the end of this podcast, we're going to give you another tip for how to do one stitch in time instead of nine. We're going to share with you information from a very interesting channel, Buddhism in English. They share tips on how to stop laziness.
You need to investigate what are the ways that I can do my work easily. What are the ways that I can be more productive in my work? If you investigate yourself in your work, then you can kill the laziness. Because sometimes we do the things that we don't love and that we don't like. If you have the power of investigation, that what are the things that I like to do? What are the things that my heart feels free to do? If you do those things, you will never feel lazy. So what you have to do? You need to have these four great qualities. First one is called Chanda.
A stitch in time saves nine is a very meaningful metaphor. It might sound too simple, but it can describe what we need to understand to make our life easier. Today, we shared with you some excellent tips on how to do it. And also, we gave you some explanations on the psychological reciprocity between our actions and our thinking. Remember that you fail only if you stop trying. It's like what they say, You've got to be in it to win it, right? The change always happens slowly, but in the end, it's worthy. And when building a new habit, first, you don't see the results. It takes a little time, but they're there. You've made that first step. If you're listening to this show, that means that there is something inside of you that is ready and it's craving a new, better way of thinking and acting. Continue with the good work and be ready for our next dose of motivation. And don't forget, you can always find us here online. You can hear those links again and again if that will help you to get your act together so that you don't behave as the metaphor is sometimes used as saving a stitch. So a stitch in time saves nine. It's true. Thanks for listening to this episode of Metaphorically Speaking. I hope you enjoyed it and maybe learned something new. Thanks so much again to our guest, Zavira Zay Bell. Check out her book. We'd love you to share the show with your friends, and please feel free to leave a review on colorful.com and on our podcast, Metaphorically Speaking, which is on Apple, Spotify, and all major streaming platforms. If you'd like to suggest a metaphor for an upcoming show, and people have done this and we've had great fun researching it, you can reach us at
keep it for the best music anywhere.
I don't know, there must be something in the water, babe. Cause I don't know how I caught these feelings for you, babe. And the love language you speak, it makes me weak. Feeling like I need to crawl before I fall, babe. You look like you flew straight out of heaven, babe. That thing you did last night, damn, it drove me crazy. To keep you happy, I'll do all the best I can. Out of these lemons, we just made lemonade, babe. Out of all the people I know, you're my favorite. Out of all the people I know, you're my favorite. I don't know what I did to deserve this, babe. All I know is that I'm not gonna stop, babe. The world should see the smile you made on me. Broke the shackles off my heart and set me free, babe. Thought I'd never love again to this degree. Walk with you blind because I trust you, baby. I have so much love for you that it overflows. It's my pleasure to spend my life with you, baby. Out of all the people I know, you're my favorite. Out of all the people I know, you're my favorite. You're mine. You're mine. You're mine. Thank you.
up like Napa. Anything you want and I'ma do whatever. Because I love and I love and I love and I love you only. Because I need and I need and I need and I need you more. Yeah, you know I run and I run and I run and I run. Fly, fly in the sky in the night. Put me in your arms and your love and your life. Love me tender,
love me judge, love me tender.
Love me judge, love me tender.
Love me judge, love me tender.
You my sugar, my honey, my tender lover.
You my sugar, my honey, my tender lover.
Yeah, you are my sugar, my honey, my tender lover.
Oh sugar, my honey, my tender lover.
Why would you just open your mouth and say something?
Actually,
It comes.
Yeah, Copenhagenics.
Gotta get a little, 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 gotta get a little
I'm glad that you're home. It's time for us to party.
We've been working hard all week long.
Let's get dressed and hang out tonight. I don't wanna come home until they turn out the lights, 'cause I can't hardly wait till we make our way out to the club. I just wanna chill and I have some fun. All I want is for us to lose ourselves for an hour or two.